the U.S. and China going head-to-head for Latin America's attention.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. The president of China begins a tour of Latin America today. First stop, the Caribbean island of Trinidad. His visit comes after Vice President Biden came through the region. Biden just sealed a renewable energy deal with Trinidad. What does this mean for Latin American economies when the U.S. and China compete for their business? Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Sometimes the economic interests of the U.S. and China complement each other. For example, Trinidad is one of the world's leading producers of natural gas. The U.S. used to buy a lot of it from Trinidad until we tapped our own reserves.
Trinidad now needs to find global markets for its primary commodity.
Eric Farnsworth is with the Council of the Americas.
China's hungry for energy, and it makes a lot of sense to talk to the Trinidadians about perhaps developing that energy relationship.
But the U.S. and China also compete in Latin America as the continent becomes increasingly important to the world's economy. Jorge Piñon is with the University of Texas in Austin.
Chinese national oil companies have a competitive advantage over U.S. oil companies.
Piñon says China loaned a total of $45 billion to Brazil and Venezuela to develop energy projects. He says the loans will be repaid in oil. That's a deal it would be hard for Exxon or Chevron to match. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Now let's do the numbers. A strong Friday for stocks in Japan, with the Nikkei rising 1.4%, but the FT100 in London is down 1.1%. Stock index futures in the United States at the moment are lower. Unemployment in Europe today hit a new record high, 12.2%. It's about 20 million people across the 17 countries that use the euro. In Frankfurt today, there were protests in front of the European Central Bank. The BBC's Steve Evans is in Germany. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, David.
So we had Occupy Wall Street over here. The European protesters are calling themselves what? Blockupy?
That's right. Blockupy, because they want to block the European Central Bank. In other words, have a cordon around it so that nobody could get in and out. And that's precisely what they did. They turned up in the morning there, in the rain, I have to say, in Frankfurt, and joined hands around the bank for a short time, but pretty well orderly. They made their point, which was an anti-capitalist point, saying that the ECB is one of the institutions imposing austerity, particularly on Greece and Spain, and so should be resisted.
Whether European Central Bank officials like it or not, though, their institution is emerging as a powerful symbol of economic pain.
It is. The Federal Reserve has got the obligation to worry about inflation on the one side and unemployment on the other. The European Central Bank is worried only about inflation. And what a lot of people say, not just the Blockupy people, but they say that particularly at the moment, when you look at the way the economies are going, only worrying about whether inflation is going to go up is asymmetric. So there is a wider protest and a wider argument, really, amongst economists about whether the European Central Bank is basically, as it were, one-eyed in its aim in economic policy.
The BBC's Steve Evans in Berlin. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Tax reform is set to be a hot topic in Washington this summer. It's been almost 30 years since the last overhaul of the tax code. And now a bipartisan duo of lawmakers is asking for public input through digital media. The effort mirrors a similar campaign back in the 1980s that relied on pen and paper. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer now on how it worked out.
You remember what a letter is, right? Piece of paper, folded up, stuck in an envelope. Well, close your eyes and pretend it's 1985. President Reagan makes a nationally televised speech on the need for tax reform.
No other issue will have more lasting impact on the well-being of your families and your future.
House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dan Rostenkowski gives the Democratic response. He's been working with President Reagan on tax reform, but he thinks one key player is missing, the American people. So Rostenkowski says, write me a letter.
Even if you can't spell Rostenkowski, put down what they used to call my father and grandfather, Rusty. Just address it to R-O-S-T-Y, Washington, D.C. Post office will get it to me.
Eventually, the post office got more than 75,000 letters to Rostenkowski. Rob Leonard read quite a few of them. He was Rostenkowski's chief tax counsel. Leonard says none of the public suggestions actually made it into the tax reform bill, but Rostenkowski did use the letters to win over reluctant members of Congress.
If you have any doubt that this is important, I have a reservoir of letters here.
It was a potent weapon, one Senator Max Baucus would like to have. The Montana Democrat is head of the Senate Finance Committee. He's working with the current chair of House Ways and Means, Republican Dave Camp, on new tax reform legislation. Baucus says they were trying to come up with a way to get the public involved.
So we got talking, thinking, you know, that's what Rossi did. It's kind of hard for us to do that now because people don't write letters anymore.
But they do go to websites and Twitter. So Baucus and Camp launched a Twitter account and taxreform.gov, a website with a prominent place for public comment. But the 21st century technology might not be as effective as Rostenkowski's lowly letters. Just ask Clint Stretch. He was a congressional tax staffer in the 80s. He says now Congress is too bitterly divided over taxes on the rich and deficits.
Just saying you want to do tax reform is not going to change that fundamental debate.
Even if you have a Twitter account. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And in the Tom Stoppard play Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, the characters, borrowed from Hamlet, flip a coin which keeps coming up heads. Something's wrong with the law of probability, and therefore the universe is the point. Well, they should have said tails. Science News is reporting that if you spin a penny with the Lincoln Memorial on the back, it'll land tails side up about 80% of the time. Coin's heavy on the Lincoln's head side, it turns out. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.